That's how that'll go.
So we're starting today talking about evangelism, and we've moved into the section of the book that's reflections on practice. So the first three chapters were kind of, so what is this? Hi! So what is this way of Jesus thing? And the rest of the book is, so what does it mean? What are the practices? And it looks at it in a lot of different ways. And we'll do as many as we can. We only have this week and next week because the week after that is Palm Sunday. So we'll get through as many chapters as we can, and that'll be that. But the first chapter in this section is evangelism. And I think this is really hard for Episcopalians. I think it's a word that we hear and go... And I think a piece of that is kind of deeply ingrained in our DNA is a concept of politeness, right? And it feels very rude to ask people about their faith. And I certainly remember that you know, at my grandmother's dinner table, one didn't discuss money, religion, or politics because,
you know. There was a cardinal rule.
Yes.
We all grew up with.
Yes.
It. You talk about groupthink.
Yes. Yes.
That was it.
Yes. These are not topics that one discusses because they're personal, right? And the challenge for us as Christians is our faith is indeed personal, but it's not supposed to be private. And there's a difference between those things. But Megan talks about this. Megan Castellan, who's the author of this chapter, talks about how do we share God's love without coercion, without, you know, the kind of if you don't believe in God the way I believe in God, you're going to hell type thing, or guilt. You know, how do we do that? And Episcopalians seem to have a particularly difficult time with that. With how do we talk about what God is doing in our lives, sharing our own stories, in a way that is just that. It's just, let me tell you about what's going on in my life, as opposed to, let me tell you what you should do with your life. And how do we make those distinctions? And it's something that we find really difficult. A lot of places are doing kind of practice sessions in telling your own faith story, because it's not something any of us were ever really taught to do, unless we went to seminary. And if you were ordained, the first thing they make you do is write a spiritual autobiography, and then you have to tell that story over and over and over and over and over again, so to the point that you get sick of your own faith story. But part of the reason for that is to get you comfortable talking about God in your life. And so a lot of congregations are starting to do dinner tables or, you know, gathering around. Usually they're, for the Episcopalians, it's usually places where there is alcohol, so that, because that makes people a little more comfortable. But gathering together and telling faith stories, our own faith stories to one another, so that we get used to talking about God and what God is doing in our lives. Now, in my life, in my Episcopal church where I grew up, we were charismatic and evangelical Episcopalians at a time when nobody else was that. You know, that was not something polite people did. But we had a time in the church service, after the announcements, where anybody could stand up and share what God was doing in their lives.
Oh my goodness.
So I grew up thinking that was just, because that was the church I grew up in, that's what we did. You know, we talk about what God is doing in our lives. And then I went to college and encountered another Episcopal church where that not only was that not part of the service, but nobody was comfortable at all talking about what
it was
God
the mindset
was doing. Yeah.
That I grew up with.
Yes.
No
yes.
question.
Yeah. So that's, let me stop there and say, when you hear the word evangelism, what does it make you think of? And how are you comfortable or uncomfortable with the concept?
And that's part of the reason I am here. Mm-hmm. Is because I'm on the journey of changing my mindset. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't happen overnight.
No, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that what you were saying, how it is just kind of like sharing something, mm-hmm. and I don't know, and sometimes I think if something kind of profound happens that mm-hmm. you want to tell people. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't really kind of noticed mm-hmm. or, you know, been looking, mm-hmm. you might not have anything to say. Mm-hmm. But if
you may not even realize what was happening. This is this is another reason I am here, mm-hmm. is, you know, even going back and thinking about more of the beginning of the mm-hmm. journey, mm-hmm. there were things going on that I didn't even realize I was being encouraged to go in a particular direction. Mm-hmm. I'll share one story.
Sure.
Because of that, when my husband and I decided to be married, mm-hmm. I mean, I was very young, mm-hmm. etc. And at that time, I mean, I wasn't practicing at this point. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I didn't care. It didn't make any difference to me what anybody was, mm-hmm. as long as they believed. Mm-hmm. Just believe. Mm-hmm. And that was me. So we were married while he was Catholic. And I had to sign all his papers. Mm-hmm. And my husband was out of town a lot. He traveled a lot. So as the children grew up, when they were, the first three came very quick and very close together. So when they were capable of going to church, you know, mm-hmm. the time was right to do that. Well, and then it was up to me. Sign those papers. My mother, your family, what do I do? Well, I made the decision to go mm-hmm. to church mm-hmm. with them for years. Mm-hmm. Well, I experienced it firsthand mm-hmm. for a very long time. And then I thought, well, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. There was a huge void mm-hmm. in my life. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, how am I going to handle this? Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, then baby was born. Gee, what do you know? Can't go to church anymore. Then realized the baby was still sleeping at 8:00 in the morning. Aha. So, anyway, we handled it just fine. Mm-hmm. That's how I got to be an 8:00
here, okay.
And I got home just in time every Sunday. The other three were all dressed right, ready to go. I mm-hmm. took them to their instruction class by 9:00 mm-hmm. and voila.
That's a fabulous story. Wow. That's really great. So
I mean, it's true. Mm-hmm. No question. Mm-hmm. But it's the funny thing is, my kids never asked mm-hmm. me about it. Mm-hmm. And I think the people at Our Lady of Peace probably thought I was Catholic as well. Mm-hmm. The only thing I didn't do was when they had us stand up and mm-hmm. take a pledge mm-hmm. not to see a particular movie that they didn't approve of, I did stand up, mm-hmm. but I didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just saw it wasn't for me.
One of the things that in, certainly in the last two generations is true in the Episcopal Church is we have done a pretty bad job of, as a denomination, not necessarily as individual congregations, but as a denomination, of raising our own children in and keeping them active in the faith, but we've done a really good job of recruiting other people's children. So if you look at the demographics of the Episcopal Church now, more than half of the people who are today members of the Episcopal Church were not raised in the Episcopal Church. They are people who found us college or post-college or, you know. But the flip side of that is we have not done a very good job of raising children who are... the children who grew up in the Episcopal Church don't generally stay. We keep about 25% of the kids raised in the church, and that's been true for about 30 years now. 40 years now, because 40 years takes us back to the 70s. So, yep.
Just one other thing that popped mm-hmm. into my head was when I began volunteering at the Historical Museum, mm-hmm. I met a person who was a... we worked together on the computer, and mm-hmm. for some reason, one day she shared with me, she was a friend of Bud Prance. Do you remember Bud Prance?
I do remember Bud, yes.
Okay. They were neighbors, and they mm-hmm. really liked each other. And anyway, this gal went to Our Lady of Peace. Mm-hmm. She came to St. Paul's one night for... St. Paul's used to, like they do occasionally, hold public meetings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, she came here, and after that, when I saw her the following week, she looked at me and she said how much she liked coming to St. Paul's to the meeting, just the mm-hmm. atmosphere here.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you know, I go to church every Sunday because I have to. Mm-hmm. You go to church every Sunday because you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of, yeah.
It's, well, and that's, church growth and evangelism are two different things, right? Church growth is about bringing people to your particular congregation. Evangelism is about sharing the good news of God in Christ with others. But they overlap, because for most of us, we live out our faith in the context of the congregation that we belong to. But one of the challenges for church growth, that kind of the flip side is, one has the potential anyway to be one of the benefits for evangelism, is that our society has really changed. And I've talked about this before, but really until kind of the mid to late 70s, you couldn't go to public school without getting Protestant Christianity kind of laminated on you. Not in depth, but at least the kind of basics of it. And also, it was really pretty much expected that you had a church that you showed up at often enough that the minister knew who you were, right? Maybe not every Sunday, but regularly enough that that you were not just a member on the rolls, but you went. Because that was the way the society was. And certainly if you were kind of at the middle management level or above, they took note of, well, where do they go to church and those kinds of things. And those things no longer happen, right? It's entirely possible to live your life in 21st century America without the church even really being a part of your consciousness, except for if you listen to, like, political talk. But there are a lot of people for whom church doesn't even enter their awareness. The good news about that is that we can make our church life be about our faith. It doesn't have to be, we don't have to be as much kind of a social club as we used to have to be. And I don't mean that in the way of we don't do things together, but we don't have to include people who aren't here for faith reasons, right? We don't have to try to make the church be all things to everybody. But the downside is we have to convince people that there's a reason for them to come. And that's hard, especially with us in our ingrained, well, we don't talk about that, it's not polite. So, you know.
Life is such an up and down journey.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine that a person can get through some of these hardships, some of the down times, which we all have, mm-hmm. without having faith. Mm-hmm. I can't wrap my head around that. What do those people do who don't have faith and bad things happen? Bad things happen to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do at those times?
Well, I obviously am a person of faith, so I think that's, you know.
I couldn't have endured as long as I have without faith.
And so that, you know, that's one of the things we have to figure out, how we share, again, without coercion and without guilt, but how do we share, you know, this rock that I found, this support that I found, this important thing that I found in my life. So, those are kind of the evangelism questions that are facing us, is how do we do that? How do we let people outside our doors know what goes on in here? Because we can't anymore assume that, oh, well, they'll come and they'll find out. Because maybe not, right? So how do we get out into the public sphere and talk in a public way without falling into the trap of being, you know, the Episcopal Church is never going to be street corner evangelists, right? We're never going to be people knocking on doors saying, let me tell you about Jesus, because that's not who we are. But how do we take our faith into the public square? I'm asking a question because I don't have the answers. But, so that's something
well,
for us to think about.
Well, because I think we walk in his way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be an example. Maybe somebody will notice.
One of the things I've done before, and I haven't done this Lent, but I may do in May, because we have a long stretch in May, is tell everybody to, in turns, not everybody the same Sunday, take a Sunday off of coming to church. But you don't get to stay home.
Oh.
Go out somewhere. Go out to breakfast, go out running your errands, go do something. And see where people are in our community when we're in church. And then think about how we might communicate to those people what it is we have to offer.
Well, I'll bet there's lots of them at home with their feet up, drinking their coffee, watching whatever. They're nice and comfy.
The last time I took a Sunday off, really off, not just I'm away visiting or something, I was amazed at the number of people at Lowe's and Home Depot on Sunday morning.
Probably during summer.
Yeah, yeah, what time of year was that?
And Wegmans and, you know, those kinds of places. But the Lowe's and Home Depot, really amazing. It's like, oh, look, the whole world.
But in today's society, particularly, mm-hmm. let's say you have mm-hmm. a responsible 9-to-5 mm-hmm. job, mm-hmm. Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. that doesn't leave very many hours left. Mm-hmm. And if you have kids, mm-hmm. they're doing mm-hmm. sports, et cetera. It's... you know, how many mm-hmm. times have I wished, a 24-hour day, if there was just one more hour, mm-hmm. one more hour each day? Mm-hmm. That's all I would ask for.
Mm-hmm. If only so I can get more sleep.
Oh, that too. Yes, yes.
So let me really quickly then, we'll move on and do multicultural ministries. We're not going to finish the whole book next week, but at least this will get us a little ways. One of the things that is true in the United States is we are a much more multicultural country than we used to be. And that's due to a lot of reasons, including some changes in our immigration laws in the 60s, but also just kind of the way the world is changing, right? We live in a universal world in a way that we never really did before. And so if you look around the United States, there are several groups of people who are a huge, much larger percentage of the population than they used to be. And in Buffalo, we're really aware of this because we are, as we mentioned last week, a hub for immigrants. So, you know, you look around Buffalo and we have a large Hispanic community, but we also have a large Ethiopian community and a large Burmese community and kind of the next level of...
On top of the Germans.
On top of the Germans and Italians and Poles. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is true about religion, all religions, is that religion and culture get kind of welded together. And so there are religious practices that come out of the culture, but they become baptized into the religion. And also religious practices that take on cultural significance. So let me talk about a couple that we're really familiar with because they're our culture. And then we can talk about different ways that we might adapt what we do to reach people whose culture is a little different than ours. But let me give a really good example. We're coming up to Easter, right? And if you listen to our Easter hymns, as much of the hymn is about spring as it is about Jesus, right? You know, we talk about the green blade rising and life has come again, like the tree that springs green. And we talk about the new life of the resurrection, but the images we use are all the springtime, because Easter for us is a spring festival, and so that's a really good simile. You know, oh look, the bulbs that we planted in the fall are springing up. That's a great Easter symbol, right? So we have tulips and hyacinths and all of those things in the church on Easter, and that's great. When Christianity comes to the Southern Hemisphere, Easter is not a spring festival. It's a winter festival. Mm-hmm. And so all of these images of the new life that is happening in the world around us, which helps us see the new life in Jesus, doesn't work for them. And mm-hmm. so they've had to come up with new ways to think about resurrection, because they're celebrating the resurrection when everything's dying. The resurrection is, like for us, it's early to mid-spring. For them, it's early to mid-fall. And the leaves are turning and falling off the trees, and the world is dying, right? The same thing, if you look at Christmas, for us, it fits perfectly, right? The light is going away and going away and going away through Advent, and then we celebrate the return of the light of Christ with his birth. And so all of our hymns are about, you know, winter, right? The snow lay on the ground and in the bleak midwinter and all of those things. And in the Southern Hemisphere, Christmas is a summer festival. The light is at its longest, and it's warm and everybody's outside. And so again, how do you talk about the return of the light at a time when the light is at its highest? We're not feeling like, oh my gosh, when is the... And that's because both of those festivals were established by people who lived in the Northern Hemisphere. So there's as much cultural stuff as there is religious stuff in it. And then to take some of the other kind of practices we know, these are more Catholic than Episcopalian, but you know, the idea of taking your Easter basket full of food to church to be blessed is a religious practice that has become really cultural. Lots of people bring Easter baskets full of food to church to be blessed, even if they never enter the church for any other reason. right? But it's a cultural practice. And the number of people who call and want to, you know, get their baby done, right? We don't really go to church, but we want to have the baby baptized. So that has become a cultural practice. And the number of people who don't really go to church but want to have a church wedding. You know, these are practices that have moved from religion to culture. In the case of marriage, they moved from the culture to the religion and now are moving back to the culture. That's actually kind of true with Christmas, too. The winter solstice festivals, the church, I say this kind of facetiously, but it's true, the church yanked Christmas away from the pagans, and now the pagans are taking it back. It was a cultural festival before it became a religious festival, and now it's as much a cultural festival as a religious one. Well, the same thing is true with the cultures that are coming to our country, right? They have their own cultural practices that have become a part of the religion. One of the ones that you see a lot in, even in Episcopal churches that have a large Hispanic population, is the Our Lady of Fatima celebrations, which is huge in certain portions of the Hispanic community, particularly the Mexican community, and then get brought into the church. But if you think about, you know, the way that we worship, we sing hymns that are basically 18th century English poems. They're not all 18th century English poems, but most of them are in that school, which is great for us because that's our culture. But it's not the culture of people who are coming in. So how do we, as a church, make space for everybody's culture to be a part of our faith? Right? That's the challenge of multicultural ministry. And it's a huge challenge. And we know that it's a huge challenge because every study, and you've probably heard this before, but Gallup every year proves it, the worship time on Sunday morning is the most segregated time in the United States. That if you look at how races and cultures mix, whether we're doing a good job of it or not the rest of the week, we're doing a really bad job of it in the church. We all divide ourselves into churches where we find our culture reflected in the religious practices, which is not good news for us, because the kind of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant population in the United States is declining. And so if we want our church to continue, we have to figure out how we can assimilate pieces of other people's culture into our church. And I have to go get dressed, so I will leave that thought with you.
I can just come up with one word. Yeah. Education.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily from the church.
Right.
It could be in conjunction with people learning history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so there's